How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have tons of news to talk about today. We're going to kick it off with some pro wrestling news. It is TNA Hardcore Justice Sunday. We're going to run down the lineup for that show, all of the matches, talk the Bound for Glory series, some discussion about what they might do over the next couple of months, and more. Also, UFC 150 was last night. 150, which at one point was scheduled to be a giant mega show on the level of UFC 100. It did not end up being that way. It ended up being a show headlined by a match, which was a good match, but went pretty much exactly the way everybody expected, except for the winner, which I know that Mike is upset about, at least in the sense that he picked the other guy and now feels that he should get the pick correct because he feels that the other guy actually won the fight. We'll talk about that. Plus, the ROHI pay-per-view took place last night. If you have not had a chance to check that out, it should be up available for online viewing on a number of different platforms, including, I believe, the iPad later on today, so you can check that out. The G1 Climax tournament has wrapped up. A surprising name in the finals. He did not win, but we'll still talk about that tournament, what it means, and where they're going. All the TV from the past week, Raw, SmackDown, Impact, etc. Some WWE releases, some surprising, some not. Some that aren't surprising, surprising at least in the timing of when these releases occurred, what was behind them, what everybody is speculating about why AW and Sophia Cortez were released. We'll talk about the life and times of Red Bastien, who passed away. Met Red a couple of times at Cauliflower Alley. We'll talk about some stories from his life. A wild man, a man who, Dave Meltzer noted, may have taught Ric Flair how to be Ric Flair, for better or worse. And talk about Red. Plus, Alistair Overeem. Is he actually getting the next heavyweight title shot? The Olympics? So much more. All of that is coming up in the next 2 hours, so buckle up and get ready. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Michael P. Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Remember all of those stations, times, etc., because as the football season kicks into high gear, there will be times when we are preempted from Sirius and XM Radio. But you can always hear the show by going to the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. And in fact, if you've got an iPhone, an Android, or a number of other smartphones, you can download the TuneIn Radio app. It should be free. If not, it may be like 99 cents. It's called
It is free, but I actually upgraded to the pro version. I actually like the thing so much.
And the pro version. Now, if you get the TuneIn Radio app, you can search for Sports Byline USA. All Sports Byline programming is carried on the TuneIn Radio app, and that includes our program. So, for example, if you've got Bluetooth access in your phone, or if you've got a plug-in from your phone to your car stereo system, you can jump into the car, load up the TuneIn Radio app at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern every Sunday, and listen to the show in the car if, for example, your Sirius satellite radio is not carrying the program. So check out those different options there for listening, and you'll never be without Wrestling Observer Live. Mike, the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view from TNA has taken place today, and it's looking like it could be a good show in the ring, also looking like a show that not a lot of people are going to buy.
Now, yeah, it's too bad, too, because I know Destination X did not do a lot as far as buys, which I don't think anybody can be truly shocked over or anything like that, but they got good momentum with the way the card was, and everybody really enjoying, especially the second half of that show, and they did a great job with Austin Aries. And, I was kind of wondering going in if they should put the belt on him. After they did, I thought it was a great move, but they were not able to keep up the momentum and able to keep up two storylines when it comes to Bobby Roode as it relates to James Storm and Austin Aries. And they've kind of just done a, to me, it's been relatively lukewarm as far as that little triangle goes and introducing aces and eights and them wanting to obviously this whole thing leading up to Roode and Storm. And does the title have to be on the line? I didn't think it did. But if Aries is not going to get any hotter right now, then you might as well put the belt back on Roode. And I know it's just a whole lot of convoluted mess I just got into right here. But, again, I don't think they've taken advantage of exactly what they had in their hands, you know, leading into this show. And I don't think, again, I've been watching TV. I know the Bound for Glory series has been going on. It has not been as wacky as it's been in the past. But with that said, I'm not really sure if buying a bunch of four ways for 20 points is going to separate anybody from their money.
I think that's actually the best argument for taking the belt off him is I understand why they did it. I think it was a good idea at the time. But the timing, and actually this is going to be a problem every year, I think. The timing of the X Division champion cashing in his briefcase to get a shot at the title, it's too close to the biggest show of the year. It would be if, like, for example, the Money in the Bank winner was allowed to cash in every year at the December pay-per-view. It muddies the waters too close to your biggest show of the year. You've got Austin Aries with the title, which is great, but what's Austin Aries going to do with the title when the whole idea originally, and I believe still the idea, is to do Bobby Roode and James Storm in 2 months? You know, you keep the title on him at this pay-per-view, and then you've got to take the title off him, and Bobby Roode wins 1 month before he loses again. You've got a one-month reign. You've got 1 month to build up this match. It's something, but to me, it should be more. It should be that the champion is a champion for a long time, and the challenger finally gets his chance after winning the Bound for Glory tournament. You've built it up for a while. It just seems quick. It seems a quick turnaround. And I don't know what you do with Austin Aries afterwards. He ends up with a one-month title reign. We'll see what they do tonight. I think there's got to be some sort of angle tonight based on what they did on television where the storyline, let me explain this to everybody. I didn't understand. Storyline is that Bobby Roode, who is the challenger, said that he was so upset that if he lost today, that he would not get another title shot, that he was boycotting the match and not taking the title shot today. So in other words, he was willing to give up the one title shot he was guaranteed because he was so upset that if he lost, he wouldn't get another one. That right there made no sense to me. And then Austin Aries was like, fine, let's make a verbal agreement that if I win, you don't get another title shot. But if you win, I don't get a rematch, which again is baffling. Why would the babyface make this challenge? Why did Austin Aries want the match so bad that he's willing to give up his automatic rematch clause, especially when during the interview, he pretty much admitted that somebody could run in and screw me, and I still will not ask for another one. So, I don't know.
Well, you know, and I can see a heel and a babyface saying that. I think how it came out, it didn't work because, you know, Bobby Roode is, well, you need me. I'm a big star. So you know what? You know, I want to make sure I have title matches. You're going to screw me out of this and make sure I never get one again if I do this, no matter who the champion is. And he could throw more of a fit. And Aries could have been more of the heroic. Well, you know what? He could have really driven home the point that, you know, you called a fluke. It wasn't a fluke. And I'll prove it by beating you again. And you know what? I don't even need another title shot. That's how confident I am. And I don't think they really... I think that the story was decent. I don't think it came across very well. And, you know, back to Aries, too, I thought they should wait and do the Storm Roode title change because that's what everything has been building for. That's what would make the most sense. But then I was fine with them putting Aries in the mix because I still think you can do the grudge if you build it up right. You can still do the big grudge, you know, pinnacle of the feud without the title. I know it may not mean as much, but you could have still done, you know, Bobby Roode getting, or James Storm getting his revenge on Bobby Roode in a, you know, a violent or some incredible fashion without the title. You didn't need that at stake, so I was fine with Aries with the belt. But it's what, again, having he and Roode and then Rude and Storm locked up into a story. It's kept, I think, Storm too close. I think they would have been better off just kind of not, you know, pushing Rude and Storm as much in the aces and eights, or, sorry, pushing Rude as much in the aces and eights angle, and let it kind of simmer off for a month.
I'm wondering why they put the stipulation in about the loser not getting another match, because you've got a pay-per-view next month that's not Bound for Glory. And on that show, obviously, you're going to get the finals of the Bound for Glory tournament. The top point getters are going to, I think it's two matches, and then the winners face each other. So we end up getting the man who's getting the title shot at Bound for Glory. But last year they did this. They also had a championship match on the show. And who gets the title match if Bobby Roode and Austin Aries have agreed to not have a match together?
Yeah.
Everyone else is tied up in the tournament.
Yeah. Hey, well, that's one of those things, too, that, you know, maybe we're thinking about this and nobody else is, as it relates to, like, why people do open challenges on fight night. But, yeah, you know, certain people do, but other people don't. It doesn't really... You know, that may be one of those.
Well, I will say they did answer that question the last time they did open fight night. They gave the top four point getters the opportunity to make the challenges.
True.
But that did raise the question, why did they all just happen to challenge the other four guys? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why didn't all four guys challenge the same guy? You know?
Well, and all this said, too, they're still going to, you know, get my money tonight, because I still have faith in what they're doing and where they're going. But, yeah, I just, you know they got to do Rude Storm, but they have all these other things going on. They're trying to make it fit together. And I hopefully, because this is the second crack at it realistically, hopefully, you know, when it comes time for it to, you know, to culminate, that it's not, you know, it's where it really should be.
Maybe they'll reveal aces and eights tonight, and somebody will face the main guy next month. Although, I would presume they're going to be heels, so it wouldn't make sense for them to face Rude. I don't know what they're going to do. I do know that on Thursday, they didn't sign a contract. They made a verbal agreement. So maybe Joe Park Esquire will be forced into this to help out Bobby Rude get one more title shot next month. And talk about that after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, the Hobby Man, here at WrestlingObserver.com. We're here talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, which is our website. We're talking about the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. And I don't even know if during all of the discussion of the main event, either of us picked a winner. I'm picking Bobby Roode. Mike?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually picking Bobby Roode, too. Although, again, you know, if they have enough time to do this, I still think you can do something with Storm and Roode. Keep Aries with the title. And because he can work with pretty much everybody and have something good there, you know, leading into Slammiversary, and then, you know, Storm can challenge the winner afterwards. You have something going on after that match with Bobby Roode, you know, the big blow-off. So, you know, in a way, I'm kind of hoping it's Aries, but realistically, I think Bobby Roode.
What if you had Bobby Roode and Austin Aries, and maybe Bobby Roode wins the title with help from, I'm trying to think how you'd do this. Basically, something where Aries would, Roode and Aries would, they'd switch the title, Bobby would get the belt, but then like Ace and Nates would attack them, and they would end up teaming up next month to take on two members of the Aces and Eights, and that way you've got the champion booked in a match, you keep both of them busy, you do something with Aces and Eights. I'd have to think about this for a while. I don't like it on the surface, but it's something.
It's possible, and I wonder when, you know, I wouldn't, when would you make the big reveal of Aces and Eights? Because I don't think I'd do that until, you know, as far as who they actually are. Competing in matches is one thing, because in theory you're not supposed to know who any of these guys are, and, you know, we're just, on some guys we are, I guess, just guessing. But, you know, I probably wouldn't do it until after Slammiversary or whatever. What is the big pay-per-view?
It's Bound for Glory in September.
Bound for Glory, I'm sorry. I always screw that up. I always think Slammiversary should be, but yeah. You know, Bound for Glory being their WrestleMania, I think they should do something really on the Impact after that as far as a reset and where they're going to go.
I figured that Sting would face the main man behind Bound for behind Aces and Eights at Bound for Glory, so I would presume there'd be a reveal. Probably not tonight, just because I think they realize no one's buying this show. But I guess realistically, they probably figure no one's buying next month's show either. So I don't know when you would do this. But
and I tell you what, if there are very few people, if Sting's going to have a match against somebody, I will openly say I hope the leader of Aces and Eights, and in that case, would be Jeff Jarrett.
Could be. It could be. Now, what do you think about this idea? If you had a schmoz finish in the world title match, maybe Ace and Eights runs in, nobody wins. There's no champion, or there's no title change, or there's no finish. But in order to not send home the fans upset that they didn't get a finish in the world title match, you end the show with AJ Styles, Chris Daniels, Samoa Joe, and Kurt Angle having an awesome ladder match.
You know what? I'd be completely fine with that. I'd be completely fine with that. And I think people would be completely fine with that, too, because who was involved. So
I don't expect this, by the way.
No, but, and you know, realistically, you're rolling the dice there because, you know, although I'll say this, you can get stories out of that because, you know, if neither man wins, then neither man gets a rematch. Or they both get a rematch, but somebody else comes into the mix or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, that's... You can make stories come out of it, but, I don't know if it's the best idea.
I don't think they played up enough on TV the fact that AJ Styles, Chris Daniels, and Samoa Joe in a three-way was arguably the two best matches in company history, or two of them, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whether you think those were their two best matches ever, or just in the top five, both of those three-ways, legendary matches in TNA history. And,
oh, by the way, Chris Daniels is in the other one, too, with him and Elix Skepper against James Storm and Chris Harris.
That's right. That's right. But this match here, this three-way that we've been talking about, you're taking that same three-way on this show, and you're adding Kurt Angle. So, AJ, Daniels, Joe, and Angle in a four-way, in a ladder match, which, quite frankly, I don't even think they need the ladder, but what the hell? It's a hardcore justice stipulation. So those guys are going to be going for 20 points in the Bound for Glory series, and this match should be outstanding.
Oh, God, yeah. And considering how, you know, it's not like you can't make the case for that because of how many times those guys have ended the show. I know you'd think, you know, some people go, well, you know, AJ Styles and Chris Daniels are tied up with, you know, the whole Claire Lynch thing. Yeah, but they also close the show often enough every week where, you know, you could actually make that happen, have that be the main event and have it make sense. But you really got to have that schmoz go well in the semi-main with the world title match. Again, it'll take all the bad taste out of anyone's mouths, but it's not like it would help either. You know, it's going to be, okay, those guys closed the show, that was great, but if the Rude Aries thing ends up stinking, or with Aces and Eights, or Bombs, or something like that, you know, you didn't do yourself any good.
We've got three four-ways, all for 20 points, involving all of the people in the Bound for Glory series. AJ, Daniels, Joe, and Angle should be awesome. You've also got James Storm, Bully Ray, Jeff Hardy, and Robbie E, which I actually think is going to be pretty entertaining. That's for 20 points. It's a tables match, which to me suggests that, well, there are a lot of things. There's a lot of things to discuss during this particular segment here. First off, because it's a table match, you could have Robbie E win. I mentioned on about 10 shows this week, I don't think they've done a good enough job explaining to people how important these 20 points are or aren't for particular individuals. For example, if Robbie E wins this match, and it's a tables match, so that's kind of like, whenever you want to have somebody win but not actually beat anybody, you do a tables match. So I'm thinking Robbie E could win. If he wins, it doesn't matter. He's so far down that the 20 points, it's a waste of 20 points. Whereas a guy like Bully Ray, you know, he's up there in the standings. He wins 20 points, that could put him close to the top or at the top. These stories, I feel, should have been talked about more on TV. But point I'm making here is Bully Ray's contract, it's down to the wire. And he's been tweeting, asking people if he should stay or if he should go to WWE. And that's not necessarily an option, but he's been tweeting it. I don't know if WWE would even take it back. But the point is, he's been tweeting, he's been asking fans, about 50-50, which is interesting, actually. And he, if he's going to stay, could win this match. Or if he's going to leave, obviously, I think not only would he lose this match, but Aces and Eights has threatened to be at the pay-per-view and go after him. So my assumption, got a couple of assumptions. When he won his match on Thursday's show, I presumed he had re-signed, but he had not. So I would guess if he has not re-signed today, Aces and Eights may kill him and take him out of the tournament and out of TNA. If that doesn't happen, I presume he's going to re-sign. If he wins this match, I'm sure he's re-signing. But he's figured into the tournament. If, you know, he doesn't re-sign, they've got plans, they've got ways to get around this. You know, they actually have ideas for this tournament based on the points and who's going to win. It's an intricately booked tournament, believe it or not. So it'll be a very interesting match to see who wins, whether anybody gets taken out, etc.
I agree with all of that right there. And I really, at the end of the day, hope Bully Ray doesn't leave, although he is one of the few guys. In fact, he may be the only guy in the world that I would not mind seeing touts from. What do you call his touter machine?
His touting accoutrement.
That's he's been great. And, you know, for what you said about the tournament, too, that is right. It's like Robbie E defeating Jeff Hardy last week. Now, I don't think they did a good job really hyping up the fact and tying in the tables matches together as far as, you know, the build into the pay-per-view or anything like that. But when it comes to the individual stories involved in these things, they have actually done a very good job.
We've also got another four-way. Rob Van Dam, Mr. Anderson, Magnus, and D'Angelo De Niro in a Falls Count Anywhere match, which is fascinating because it's a Falls Count Anywhere four-way, which conceivably could mean that two groups of people are in two completely different places in the building, and if you were able to time this impeccably, you could have two winners in this match.
Do you think they'll go that way?
40 points given away. I don't think they're going to go that way, but you could do that.
Why would they give away 40? Why wouldn't you split the 10? You only won half the match,
also,
and win the whole match.
That's also possible. But I don't think anyone's high enough where it would hurt them if they had their 10 split.
I'll assume Anderson's going to win this, just because.
Hell of a prediction.
Well, I mean, they haven't been doing anything with De Niro, and he actually tried to explain his position this week. I like Magnus a lot, but I don't know what, you know, if they have any eyes on him there. RVD is RVD, so I'll just go with Mr. Anderson. I mean, really, this is one of the matches on there that you just go, it's a match.
I don't expect it to be all that great in the ring. Don't expect it to mean much in the overall Bound for Glory series. But, hey, who knows? We've got a tag team match. Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez against Gunner and Kid Cash. Could be fine.
As long as Hernandez and Gunner slam into each other at top speed, and you get Chavo and Kid Cash, it's probably going to be good. And obviously, I would figure that unless they're going to go somewhere else with this, Chavo and Hernandez get the win.
The women's title, Miss Tessmacher against Madison Rain for the Knockouts Championship. Miss Tessmacher, I'm a fan of hers, but she has good matches with good workers and bad matches with bad workers. And I wouldn't say that Madison Rain is a bad worker, but I would say she's probably average, and that probably is going to lead to a very average or subpar match, would be my guess. I could be wrong. We'll see.
You need to let all of these girls go to Shimmer at their will, you know, in between time. Tessmacher wouldn't, but still, Madison Rain should. I think the real winner in this, of course, is Earl Hebner, and they made enough hints at it that I will assume Earl will be the referee for this match coming up, but I still somehow think Miss Tessmacher gets the win.
We got one more giant match to talk about, and we're going to get into it after the break. A championship match. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, live worldwide on the internet, streaming from the TuneIn Radio app. If you search for Sports Byline USA, we are here talking the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view, and tonight, moments after this show goes off the air, the pay-per-view starts, and Dave Meltzer will be doing live running play-by-play of the show up at WrestlingObserver.com. If you aren't getting the show, or if you are getting the show and you want to follow along with Dave's thoughts, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go, also the place to go for all of the latest news in pro wrestling and MMA, daily news updates, newsletters, the Wrestling Observer newsletter, the legendary Wrestling Observer newsletter, published since 1983 by Big Dave Meltzer. Brand new issues up on the site every single week for subscribers. Figure Four Weekly up every single week for subscribers. Back issues of the Observer. For those keeping track of the back issues, we're in the middle of 1995, which means in just a few short months, the weekly back issue of the Observer will begin covering the Monday Night Wars. For the next 6-7 years, you'll be able to follow along the Monday Night Wars at WrestlingObserver.com. And, of course, all of our radio shows, daily radio shows. We talk everything, pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, boxing, Japanese pro wrestling, lucha, interviews, some of the biggest stars in the history of wrestling, all up at WrestlingObserver.com. Not only to get all the new shows, if you sign up for the low, low price of $10.99 per month, but if you sign up, you also get full access to our complete archive. Every show that we have ever done, dating back to 2005, is in the archives right now. I can't believe that in a couple of years will be 10 years of shows in the archives. Tens of thousands of hours of audio. You will never run out of wrestling audio. If you love this show, I'll say it again, you will never run out of audio if you sign up. $10.99 a month, that's all it costs. Head up to WrestlingObserver.com, check it out. If you like what you hear, sign up today. There's a bunch of free shows on the front page, by the way. Right-hand side of the page, scroll down. Check them out. They're absolutely free. No pop-ups, nothing to click. Just download the shows, listen to them. And if you love them, sign up, and you'll virtually get unlimited radio as a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. And during the prior segment, we were discussing Madison Rayne and Miss Tessmacher, their match for the knockout title. And Mike, you brought up an interesting question.
Well, you know, now I'm thinking about this, and I'm probably overthinking this, but when it comes to Miss Tessmacher, there are some things you can sit there and ponder and look at and really think about for quite some time and get inspiration from. And, of course, that would be her backside. No offense to her. She competes in Hooters competitions and bikini contests, so she knows how it looks. And there's nothing wrong with that. I noticed it, too, and I'm thinking, I don't want to take the belt off of her. She's got the DirecTV commercials, or at least hopefully that's what they're going to be for that direct insurance once they realize that Matt Morgan isn't around anymore and they can actually use the ones with her that they had brought up in a previous storyline. So the belt needs to stay on her. With Earl Hebner being hinted at as the referee for this match, or at least he's going to have some involvement, maybe a ref gets bumped somehow, which could be epic between these two women, maybe, just maybe, Earl has to run in there. He makes the pin, but he makes the pin with Tessmacher on top of Madison Rayne because you know what? He got tired of being accused of screwing Brett, and he wants to be on the up and up, and damn it, he's tired of all of this stuff. And Madison gets very upset because, well, what about last night? What about what I gave you? And then the crowd can begin to chant, "You screwed Earl."
That's right. I had never thought of that before, amazingly. And I don't know if that's the direction they're going. I presume that Tessmacher is retaining tonight just because they've played up on TV so heavy that Earl is going to win the title for her that I just presume that something's going to go wrong or someone's going to get foiled or someone's going to do something or who knows? Maybe Earl will leave with Brooke. I don't know what they're going to do. But I've always wondered about this. I've actually never asked anybody, but a long time ago, when Madison announced that she had a secret crush, and And one day there were a bunch of people in the ring, and Madison was on the ramp staring longingly at the ring, and everybody's trying to figure out which wrestler it is. I mean, with no hesitation whatsoever, I knew immediately that it was Earl Hebner. And the reason I came to that conclusion is not, in fact, because I'm a genius, but because of the fact that for the last several years at the house shows, they have done a gimmick where Madison ends up kissing Earl. And it happened every single day. I shouldn't say every single day. It happened regularly at house shows. And I was always wondering why. Why is Madison always kissing Earl on the road? It's so weird. And so as soon as she was looking at the ring, I was like, they're going to bring this thing to television. And I never actually got any reports of fans chanting, "You screwed Earl." But maybe that's like the entire gimmick here, is they're going to bring that to television and they're going to try and get all those fans that for the past 15 years or whatever have chanted, "You screwed Brett." Now they're going to chant, "You screwed Earl." Or maybe they'll chant, "You screwed Earl, who screwed Brett?"
Which, you know, considering that they still apparently sell those T-shirts and they do very well.
They do. I have one.
Yes. And what does it say on the back? "Damn right I did," or
yes,
something like that?
Yes. My wife.
So maybe you could have one with Madison there where, you know, Earl, just the same way, "It's damn right I did."
There was a segment on Impact where Earl, I guess, brought Madison flowers. And I think Gail walked up and was pitching a fit, and Earl just, like, stone-faced. He never said anything. He never had any sort of facial expression. He never had any sort of reaction. He just turned and walked away. And as a viewer, if you watch that, you probably would think, man, Earl is the most boring wooden guy you've ever seen. He's a horrible actor, blah, 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 blah. But if you've ever been to a TNA house show, the star of those shows is Earl Hebner. He usually gets his own entrance. He comes out wearing the Bret Hart sunglasses. He comes out wearing his "You Screwed Brett" and on the back, "Damn Right I Did" shirt. And he is like, he's phenomenal interacting with the fans. I mean, twice I've gone to a show and a guy has actually tried to jump over the rail to get at Earl and had to be hauled back. I mean, he's amazing. And I took my wife to a TNA show, and she's not a wrestling fan. You know, she knows some of the guys and everything like that, but she's not like a fan. But Earl was her absolute, by far, favorite character at that TNA show. So when they came back to Kent, she was out of town, and so I had to go to the show without her. And there was Earl selling "You Screwed Brett" shirts, and I bought one for her, and I had Earl sign it. And I can't mention on the air what Earl said about what was going to happen when I presented my wife with this shirt that he'd signed. But he made it very clear that it would be a lucky day for me. Earl is an amazing man, and she was so happy to get that shirt. So yes, they still sell them, and I don't know how much money he makes at it, but he seems to do pretty well selling those shirts.
30 years in the wrestling business, whatever it's been now for Earl Hebner. You see, just you learn things along the way, and you keep it going and you keep it moving. And well, was it a lucky night for you that night when you presented the shirt to her?
I can't reveal that information here on the air.
Okay,
but
understandable.
She didn't screw Brett. Let's just put it that way. Did I just say that? I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that here on Sports Byline. Let's move on.
TNA X Division Championship.
That's right. Kenny King and Zema Ion. Should be pretty good.
Yeah, you know, Kenny King, it's not like it's a make or break for or anything like that. He's going to be in TNA for at least a little while here. But, you know, has looked better for whatever reason. Hopefully he's got new gear on that does not say ANX on it. I don't need to be seeing that anymore. They gave him a little, you know, personality profile piece this past Thursday on Impact. All he's got to do is have a good match. I wouldn't take the belt off Zema Ion. Just really wouldn't make any sense to. So even I just hope it's a good match for Kenny King so he can try to stay in the mix there. But and hopefully because it doesn't stink either. And Ion, and again, I'm not a huge fan of Zema Ion as champion or anything like that as far as having cohesive matches in the X Division with a multitude of guys. But we'll see.
If they want to take the title off Ion, I wouldn't do it yet either, but you may as well if you want to do a switch at some point, because they're holding off the Jesse Sorensen feud, obviously, until Sorensen can return. And the last update I got, it's going to be a long time. I do expect him to be back, but this was a very serious injury. I don't know if people understand how serious it was. I mean, he cracked his C1 vertebrae. And vertebrae? Anyway, the C1. And you can break a bone in your neck. A lot of guys have. You can break a bone in your back. But a lot of people that break their C1, it's not just like you're a quadriplegic. A lot of people that break their C1 die. I mean, that was a very, 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 very serious injury. And it's looking like his doctor's going to give him the A-OK to return. And usually doctors err on the side of caution. You know, your doctor's like, you broke your C1, you'll live a normal life, but never wrestle again. His doctor apparently has said, you'll be able to wrestle again. So as long as he takes his time, he lets it heal fully, he should be able to come back. But this is absolutely, positively, without question, not an injury that you rush back from.
No, and I started getting those bad feelings, you know, when he showed up to do the interview. And, you know, because it not that I thought it went great, actually. I thought that was, you know... obviously, he was with a lot of emotion there, too, and everything. But I thought that was Sorensen's best thing he's done since he's been there, was that promo. I thought that whole thing came off great.
Well, it was his only promo. So.
Say again?
It was his only promo.
Well, that, yeah. You know, something besides just throwing the football up and down in the air. But, I can't wait till he actually comes back. But, again, I can wait for a year or however long it's actually going to take.
So the Bound for Glory series, everybody. When this show is over, we're going to have the final, well, close to the final standings. And I'd presume that at the next show, we are going to get the finals, which I believe is going to be a round robin. Well, they've got a round robin right now. And the finals are taking place at No Surrender, which is on September 9th. And the standings as of today, James Storm well in the lead with 66 points, which is interesting because he is the favorite. So at this point, they're not even doing the come from behind. He's way out in the lead. Although if, for example, he loses tonight and Samoa Joe wins, Samoa Joe would be ahead by a fair number of points. And a very important fact that they haven't mentioned on TV is everybody wrestles everybody else. And as of tonight, James Storm will be out of matches. So if he loses tonight, and Joe wins, he's no longer in first place and he cannot regain first place. But it doesn't matter. They're doing the top 4 point getters. It's not the number one guy. It's not the guy with the most points that gets the championship match at Bound for Glory. It's the final 4, I believe, are having a series of matches leading to the... decision of who actually gets the match. So James Storm, 66 points. Samoa Joe, 54. Kurt Angle, 48. Mr. Anderson, 40. Jeff Hardy, 35. RVD, 35. Daniels, 33. Bully Ray, 28. Magnus, 21. AJ, 16. D'Angelo De Niro, 7. Robbie E, 5. I believe these are updated.
5 points, bro.
5 points, bro. But... very important to note also that James Storm, while he has 66, after tonight he'll have no matches left, whereas a guy like AJ Styles, in fact, who only has 16 points, if he wins tonight, he'll have 36 points, and he'll have 4 matches left. So, lots to discuss. We'll talk more about this after the break. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We got a short segment here. Talk about the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view from TNA. I was sitting here. I'm not a sports fan. I never watch football. I never watch baseball unless I'm dragged to a game. I never follow anything outside of mixed martial arts and some jiu-jitsu here and there, a little bit of wrestling, WWE, TNA, ROH, pro wrestling. But here I am running down all these stats. Looking at, okay, this guy's got X number of points. He's got X number of matches. What can be done here? What if he wins 20 tonight? And again, why wasn't this kind of thing discussed on Impact?
Good. Yeah, good question. All they kept saying was it's a crucial 20 points for each match, which, yeah, it is. Maybe they're wanting you to maybe look, but know, but kind of forget about the fact that Storm's got so much because maybe they were fearful of an injury or something like that, and they don't want to screw up, you know, Rude and Storm down the road. So get him up as high as he can just in case. And, you know, who knows with Styles, too, how it played into Claire Lynch. Maybe they weren't expecting to go this long with that, or who knows, you know, what exactly it is. The only thing I know, even though it doesn't make it as dramatic, you can still get a bunch of stories if you just do it in league format like, you know, the G1 does or something like that. I mean, that's the only problem with doing something so all over the place, and the fact that the average person doesn't know, doesn't care. They're not checking, you know, like sports scores or, you know, stats or standings or something like that. They're not checking it daily, so it's not like it's something where, you know, even WWE couldn't do this. Even at their best, they couldn't have, you know, people checking their website every day. It wouldn't be able to be pulled off.
I just wonder why, for a brief moment on every Impact, you couldn't throw up the standings on the screen and have Mike Tenay and Taz debate who is where, how many points, how many matches, what some possibilities are, what we can look for, who is absolutely screwed. Robbie E, for example, is in rough shape. If he wins, again, if he wins his match tonight, he'll have 25 points and one match left. It's impossible for him to win. This should at least be discussed. But it hasn't been. I guess maybe that's the fun, is you, as the fans, do that. We'll come back in just a moment, everybody. Top of the hour break. Talk to you in 7 minutes for another hour. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We're here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. First hour, we spent talking the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view, which airs immediately after this program goes off the air. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing a live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. Dave and I will also be back later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com, an exclusive members-only radio show, an hour of discussion on Bound for Glory Raw preview for Monday night, all of the news from the weekend. Dave and I do shows all the time for subscribers. So if you love this program and you'd like more audio, you're missing out if you don't check out the subscribers-only area at WrestlingObserver.com. Only $11.99 per month. Mike has been watching the Olympics, by the way, for those of you that are interested in free programming. And I guess we're now in the middle of the wrestling segment. Is that correct, Mike?
Actually, at the end of it, the Olympics end today. So actually, everything has been wrapping up and culminating with today's stuff. And tell you what, it's not free TV either. They've had some Olympic wrestling on today, but unless you're a fan of boxing, you haven't seen any combat really whatsoever take place on NBC or any of their affiliate channels for the most part. Until yesterday, when Jordan Burroughs, who University of Nebraska, Hodge Trophy winner, just a phenom of an athlete, won the Olympic gold medal. In 2011, in May, he won the NCAA title, was presented with the Hodge Trophy. 3 weeks later, he goes to the U.S. Open, faces a bunch of seasoned American guys who have had international experience, wins that, walks into the World Championships against men who have been wrestling for years across the world with international competition. He wins that. He goes to the Pan Ams. He wins that in October. Takes him around to this year, and he's accomplished all of this stuff, including winning an Olympic gold medal in the span of about 15 months, and he is dead set on catching John Smith, another great freestyle wrestler who has got a bunch of accomplishments. He plans on catching him, winning everything he can, surpassing his records, and then going on into MMA, and he's certainly going to have a hell of a fan base and a whole lot of money behind him if he chooses to.
Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We spent most of the first hour talking pro wrestling. We're going to get into some mixed martial arts here in just a moment, but first off, wanted to mention the passing. It's always an untimely passing, but Red Bastien made it to 81, and he lived a long 81 years, passed away. The effects of Alzheimer's disease took his life yesterday, and Red Bastien, Mike, was a wild man.
Yes, he was. I don't know what it is with those California guys, you know, Stevens and Maine and Piper and Chavo and Blassie and, you know, Red Bastien's another one who, you know, certainly colorful inside the ring, you know, was a jack of all trades and a ambassador for the sport and the business of professional wrestling. And I'm not sure if he's in the Hall of Fame. If not, he most definitely should be, if not for purely in-ring work, but definitely for everything he did outside of it. Which included some very interesting stories at a very interesting time in the annals of pro wrestling history.
He's not in the Hall of Fame. He gets a lot of votes every year from his contemporaries and other wrestlers, but not a lot of votes from others. And that, of course, could always change this year. Of course, the Hall of Fame season is actually upon us. And often when the Hall of Fame season is upon us and a person has recently passed away, it does help them a lot in terms of voting. So he could conceivably get in this year, but thus far he has not been voted in.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to him, you because so much of his stuff is not, you know, his contemporaries have got to be there for him, and the historians and the journalists are going to have to be there for him, too. I know historians, I believe, probably are. I know you only get 10 votes, and you know, you think that's a lot. Sometimes it's not that much when you look at the list of names and all of the people you could vote for, and you start making cases as, you know, for reasons you would or would not put them in. And, you know, you have teams like the Assassins, and there's tons of guys who you can make a case for that could possibly go in. But I think with what he did as far as, you know, he helped to, you know, Rick Bassman form Power Team USA, which I know only Sting and the Ultimate Warrior came from that, but when you include that into the work he did with the Cauliflower Alley Club, which, you know, as we talked about all this stuff with Wrestlers Rescue and Kamala and the whole nine yards, the Cauliflower Alley Club has been there for guys for, you know, this is going on decades now, and it's always been a place where, you know, one national place where everyone could come and get together. It was around before the advent of all of these, you know, seminars and things like that that you have now, and reunions and get-togethers and things like that that have popped up, and they're great. But the Cauliflower Alley Club is deep-rooted in history, not just for wrestling, but for boxing. And I think his work there from, God, what was it, 2000 to 2007, 2008, whenever Carl Laurer took over, that's something that I don't think should be passed over.
Hardcore Justice pay-per-view is taking place this afternoon, and last night was the ROH I pay-per-view Boiling Point. There have actually been some internet issues in my household, and it is an internet-only pay-per-view, so I don't currently have the speed to be able to watch the I pay-per-view. I hope to be able to watch it later on today, or at the latest Tuesday, when they claim they're going to come fix this problem. But Mike, have you had a chance to check this show out yet?
No, I ordered it, but I haven't had a chance to watch it. I'm hoping there's nothing edited out of it. As apparently it was a sold out crowd. There were some people that may have got a little too happy on whatever it was they were drinking or taking. As somebody in the front row got sick, or at least very close to it. Kevin Steen is punching out fans, allegedly. So hopefully none of this stuff is edited out of the version they put up.
We'll talk more about that show next week on this program, and hopefully talk about it tonight on Wrestling Observer Radio as well with myself and Dave. Last night was UFC 150 main event, Ben Henderson and Frankie Edgar for the title, the 155-pound title. And I know that myself and Dave, and apparently you as well, and a number of fighters believe that Frankie Edgar won that fight. It was a razor-close fight in a lot of ways. Some ways, some would argue, maybe not. But Ben Henderson got the decision and retained his title. Frankie Edgar was very unhappy. And really, as we've said 8 million times, and Dana White said it himself last night in an interview with Ariel Helwani, don't let it go to the judges. And that is exactly what happened last night, and thus it is what it is.
You know, just looking at it from a fan point of view, though, it was great. It was great because they don't have to, you know, they for the most part don't know that every single person out there had Frankie Edgar seemingly winning this fight, but they all had it with the asterisks of, boy, it was a close fight. I'm not going to be surprised if Henderson wins. And even people that had it 49-46, Frankie, it's not like anybody's upset Henderson, you know, ended up winning that fight. So it was incredibly close. Frankie couldn't finish him. Henderson couldn't finish Frankie. And it's just one of those things. I feel bad for Frankie Edgar, and I'm a big fan of his. But with that said, it is time for Henderson to move on to somebody else. Everybody was kind of a winner in this. The fans got a great fight. They have something to look forward to. There are a bunch of guys that both of these guys can face, from, you know, Pettis to, you know, Diaz to, I mean, there's tons of guys out there. So they're going to be in exciting fights, you know, let alone the fact that Frankie Edgar can move down to 145, I guess, conceivably as well, too. So realistically, I think everybody was a winner here. Obviously, Frankie Edgar was not, and some people may be upset about that, but I don't know how you can legitimately be too upset with the way everything went. And I know the crowd booed, but it's also becoming tradition now where whether you thought the guy won or lost and ended up getting the razor close, you know, decision in the main event, you're just going to boo. It just seems to be tradition now.
I don't want Frankie Edgar to move to 145.
Either do I.
All right. Just wanted to get that out there. No. I thought this was a suggestion on your part.
No, it's not. But it's something that's been taught. And he would be a beast at 145. There is no doubt in anyone's
mind. Wait.
There's
doubt in my mind, actually.
Well, because he's been fighting it the same way for so long, he can lose some strength and stuff like that. Yeah, and he's not super quick like those other guys. And yeah, I mean, I could see that. I can see it not happening. Well, I don't think he should, just because the simple fact is, this isn't an issue like a Kenny Florian, where he can beat everybody in the division, but he can't beat BJ Penn, and you're really out of options because nobody wants to see him fight anybody again. There's a zillion one people in 155. Frankie Edgar can win with 155. He can win a title and hold on to it for a significant period of time, which he's already done there. So, yeah, I'm in your camp on this because, realistically, outside of promotional reasons that the UFC would need him to do that, that's the only reason I think it makes any sense.
Now, how did you score the fight?
I had it, you know, the first time I watched it, I had it 49-46 Edgar. But it was, the thing was, I had it 49-46, and then really, I still said it doesn't matter. You know, Henderson could have won those rounds so close that I'm giving to Frankie, because I didn't want to score, all, you know, two or three of them 10-10 rounds. So I had Frankie winning 4-1. Rewatched it this morning. I had Frankie winning 3-2, and I'm still thinking the same thing about having a couple of draw rounds, which I didn't do. So it's, you know, again, it was a great fight. It was a really fun fight. They were both very impressive. There were some close moments, and, you know, yes, I had Frankie winning initially 4-1, at least right now 3-2, but you can see how Henderson also won those rounds. And did Frankie do enough to beat the champion?
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with anything.
What, did Frankie do enough to beat the champion?
Yeah, that's not a scoring qualification.
Well, no, of course it's not, but
did
I also
win the
have
rounds?
A different set of, I have a different set of scoring qualifications than the guys who actually judge them. I actually, you know, care about things like defense and leg kicks.
I had it 49-46. I haven't watched it a second time. Quite frankly, to me, wouldn't matter too much, because when you're a judge, you don't get to watch the second time either. What did you score each round at the moment is kind of the game.
Yeah, and, watched the first time.
Yeah, one judge watched it and gave it a 49-46, and two of the judges gave it 48-47. But long story short, split decision. And Benson, what I felt very bad for Frankie Edgar. I thought that he won, but at the same time, don't let it go to the judges. Finish your fights. And he didn't. I know some people are listening to this infuriated at me right now, but that's all you can do to not have this happen to you. More in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Brian Alvarez here along with Mike Sempervivi talking pro wrestling and MMA. We were talking UFC 150 last night. All these stories, as we do every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, at the post-fight press conference, as you noted during the break, Frankie Edgar looked very sad. As I noted, you got to finish fights. And I know that some people are going to say, and this is correct, Sometimes you can't finish a guy. That's fine. But if you can't finish the guy, you still have to try to finish the fight. And I don't want to say that Edgar and Henderson weren't trying to finish the other last night, but I don't think anybody could argue that there were points during the fight where you were begging the guys to do something. I'm not even saying it was a boring fight, but you got to go in there and you got to try to finish the fight. You got to try to make that move. You got to try to win each round. And if you don't, you fall into this trap of you feel you won the fight, fans felt you won the fight, but guess what? The scoring criteria is such that in the minds of two of the three judges, you didn't win the fight, so guess what? You're not the champion. And it's very difficult. So I think it's very difficult for fans. I think it's very difficult for the fighters. It's very difficult for promoters. Dana White blows his stack all the time. But at the end of the day, you have 25 minutes to try to finish this person or convince the judges in each of the rounds that you are the better fighter. And if you don't do that, then you must deal with the consequences of perhaps not getting the decision.
But with that said, it's not like Frankie in his corner were screaming this outrage. And yes, he spiked his hat, but it's not like he was losing his mind and boycotting the press conference and jumping on a table saying this is all BS. It was a close fight. I think, you know, I think people tend to forget that, you know, you're not in there during that time. People are asking Henderson afterwards of like, you know, what about this? How about the fact he was facing Frankie Edgar, who's arguably the best guy at that weight class, not counting you, who's wearing the belt? You know, it's very difficult. So they were trying to finish each other. Frankie did try to choke him out. This was not highway robbery, you know, and no one can say that, too, which is why, you know, I think your examples, in this case, it's pretty mute, because I think they did try. And they did attempt it. And yes, there were some moments, but, you know, you're head up against the guy who's your equal and you're not trying to lose the title. And yes, it's a fight, but you're trying to think about things too. And I just think this was not an out and out robbery where Edgar dominated him for five rounds and then didn't get the decision. You know, this is one of those boxing ones or something like that. This was a very close back and forth fight, which depending on how you scored it, Henderson could have easily won 3-2, which he did on two of the judges' scorecards, as well as a lot of other people, too. And frankly, if this fight would have been ruled a draw, which you could say it was, would people have been happier? This was one of those times where we have a close, controversial decision, but it doesn't hurt anybody involved. It doesn't hurt the company. It doesn't hurt the belt. It really doesn't hurt anyone.
Hold on a second.
Frankie Edgar, I guess.
Hold on a second, though. We don't know if it hurts the company, because you and I are going to watch every UFC. And a lot of the people listening to this are going to watch most UFCs. But I had some friends over last night, and they were so disappointed in that main event. They thought that Frankie Edgar won, and they were very upset that the decision was given to Ben Henderson. And we don't know...
Do they watch MMA?
Yeah, they do.
I mean, how could you not explain to them why they thought... I mean, I understand being upset that Edgar...
They understand, and they understood that it was a close fight, and in a close fight, it can go either way. But still, they felt the wrong guy got the decision. And when you've had a series of UFCs over the last couple of years, where we've had these decisions where it doesn't matter how many times we explain, it was a close fight, it can go either way. You still will always, if you go online to MMA message boards, you will every single solitary time there is a decision in a close fight have a bunch of people screaming robbery. So you know that in your average population of general MMA fans, there are fans who believe that robberies are happening all the time. And I don't know what effect that has on UFC buy rates. Are there, I don't know what percentage of people there are. Maybe it's zero. Maybe it's large that have given up on getting UFC pay-per-views because they're sick of what they consider to be bad decisions.
I don't think that's true. I really don't. I think that's the tail wagging the dog too much to think about that. I mean, because realistically, I mean, if I just, everything is doom and gloom on message boards because you have faceless people able to say whatever they want and have that doom and gloom. And yes, sometimes it gets attention, but I don't think that's affecting the general populace as far as whether they're ordering this show or not.
I don't know.
I don't think it's going to hurt business all that much when you just, when you logically step back after the emotion of last night of not getting the finish that you wanted and you go, that was a really great fight. And if you like the sport that much, it should sink in a second or two, or at least in a couple days that, yeah, okay, I understand why. Would that not want to give you, you know, this, again, there's been so many bad decisions where that one last night, I don't think is going to prevent anyone from wanting to go see them again or give UFC money
but
again.
But you know that this did a very low buy rate.
Well, yeah, but I'm not surprised. Well, I mean, look at the Brazil show. I mean, look at this whole run of them. I'm not, this decision is not going to affect that. In fact, if anything, when you look at this, the, you know, the knockouts that were on it and you hear about how good, you know, that Cerrone and Gilliard was and how fun that was and how the main event was awesome and back and forth, maybe it'll actually make somebody want to buy the next one. Not saying that'll happen either, but if you go off yours, you can go off that one too.
Well, yes, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if anybody has stopped buying pay-per-views because they're sick of decisions. But I think that I don't want to fall into the trap, and I don't think anybody should, of, and everybody does this, including me, this is what I think, therefore everyone else thinks like this. And you have to realize that there could be, I mean, if you look at the pay-per-view buy rates of late, the buys are down, and there's a lot of reasons for that. Don't get me wrong. And maybe 1% has to do with the fact that there's been a bunch of bad decisions or supposed bad decisions. But you got to realize that Dana White is the head of the company. Every time there is a close decision that he feels the other guy, he rails on that. And he goes, don't leave it in the hands of the judges. Blah, blah, judges, judges, judges. How many times has Dana ranted and raved about judges? And if you've watched this sport for any length of time, I mean, I think you and I and everybody who is a hardcore fan knew or strongly suspected that regardless of who we thought was going to win, and going in, I thought Henderson was going to win, and when it was over, I thought Edgar won, but we all thought it was going to go five rounds. And if you're a fan who sees the lineup for this card and you're very upset with decisions, you're sick of supposed bad decisions, and you know this fight is going to a decision, Mike, there probably are fans who decided not to buy the show because of that. May not be a lot of them, but there may be, and it may be a lot of them. I don't know, but I'm sure there were some.
Well, then you failed as your job as a promoter then, because you knew when you were paying for Floyd Mayweather Jr. fights that you were going to get 12 rounds. You knew when you were buying Oscar De La Hoya fights as his career progressed, you were getting 12 rounds. You know this with Pacquiao, with Marquez. You know it with a lot of guys. You're getting 12. That doesn't stop anything. And I'm telling you, and look, I'm not saying that you're not right about the decision thing, but I think far more harm would have been done if the thing would have ended up being a draw, which you can logically say the thing could have been a draw.
It could have been.
That, to me, would have done more damage.
But let me ask you this, Mike. In fairness, I'm not saying people aren't buying. I'm not saying that some people may stop buying shows because they don't want to see decisions. I'm saying that you may have a subset of fans that believe that the decisions are normally so wrong that they're not buying the show. And in the case of comparing, you know, yeah, people buy Floyd Mayweather fights, they know they're getting 12 rounds. But would you not agree that fans call for, I mean, It's almost never a robbery, but fans call robbery significantly more in MMA than in boxing, because in boxing you do have 12 rounds, and in order for the wrong guy to win a fight in a 12-round fight, I mean, that almost has to be a robbery. Am I wrong?
Yes, you can say, yeah, lopsided decision or the other way, yes.
But in a 3-round fight, because it's only 3 rounds, if you have what you feel are incompetent judges, I mean, it's far more likely that you're going to have fans screaming robbery in a 3-rounder than a 12-rounder.
I don't know. No, not really, because the percentages, I think, would be the same. Because, I mean, boxing fans are so jilted, even though they don't scream it, they're all thinking in the back of their minds, look, when everybody watches a fight, I think at this point, I think everybody that watches boxing has in the back of their mind work. So it's always there. Look, and that's the way it is for MMA, too. There's always that subset. Look, there are people that don't like decisions, and they hated watching Roy Jones box, but they were still boxing fans, and they still bought something else. I think it really, in the case of Edgar and Henderson, because I don't know how you don't spin this thing in a positive way leading out of it if you've done a good job as a promoter, because people still want to see Edgar and Henderson. They want to see him face other guys. This should be a positive coming out of this show, even though the buy rate won't be, but I can't hang that on Henderson and Edgar. It's a division that's not really going to draw super big numbers anyway, even though people do like Frankie. And look, this will get the bare minimum, I think, of the last couple of shows.
I think it's going to get the bare minimum.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be the new, this is going to be the new baseline that we judge off of is this show.
I think it'll do better than whatever the lowest number was in the last few years. I think it's going to do a little bit better than that, but it's not going to do very well. And I don't know. I think people like Frankie. I think people, I think when his fights are over, they're like, that was an exciting fight. But, I mean, they don't pay for them. That's why you're expecting this to be a baseline. We'll talk more about this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody. Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of stuff to talk about today. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And we're talking Edgar Henderson here and Frankie Edgar fights in general. The hardcore fans, a lot of fans, they like Frankie. I think they find his fights to be exciting. But for your average person, Frankie Edgar he is not a pay-per-view draw in any way. You could talk about exciting five-round fights all you want, but that's not why your average person buys a show. And that is reflected, unfortunately, in his buy rates. I think it's time. I feel bad for Frankie, but I think it's time to move on. I think that Nate Diaz and Ben Henderson, you're going to be able to promote that one pretty well because Nate Diaz is a crazy man. And I think that's going to be a very, very exciting fight. And if you want to give Edgar the winner of that fight, great! But there have been too many rematches in that division lately as a result of close fights. And I don't think you've got to move on. I agree with Dana White here. You've got to move on.
Yeah, because, again, you put Frankie in there with anybody else, and people, you know, it's not like he's a bad pay-per-view draw. If you think about what is BJ Penn's name worth, you think, right now? Maybe 300, 350. Frankie and Gray Maynard in June or January 1st, 2011, UFC 125 to 270. The new baseline happened in June when he came to Rich Franklin and Anderson Silva, too, which got 140,000. Faber and Barao in July did 235.
But I got to say one thing. You got to remember that 270 that they drew in early 2011, at the time, that was a remarkably low number.
Oh, yes. No, and look, and I'm not going to say that it's not, but I'll say this. If you're going to run 12 pay-per-view shows a year, it's almost like Destination X or one of those shows where it's like, okay, we're only going to get 200,000 people to buy this. So you really have to, I think, promotionally then do work as far as, you know, promoting these guys, but really working on the house, working on merchandise, working on other ways you can make money off an event like this, because you know it's not going to be a high watermark when it comes to, you know, people buying it. So you take care of your hardcores that way. I think with maybe some guys in 120 or 135, 140, things like that that you can do, because 200,000 is still better than what most boxing events are going to do, and since you're going to do 12 events a year, and you kind of have to, it's not like, you know, TNA where they could actually scale some back, and the cable industry, you know, wouldn't, you know, shutter at all. They want them to go 12, and there's a place for it. So I think that's okay as long as you work to promote in other ways, and they didn't have that luck this time around with the attendance in Calgary, which was good, but the gate was bad. So unless they did, and again, I'm not crying for the UFC here or anything like that, but, you know, this number was, I'm sorry, not Calgary, wherever they were last night, it was not super good. Denver last night.
Denver, Colorado, a city where the fight of the night last night went 1 minute and 16 seconds. I found that to be amazing.
1 minute and 16 seconds.
I don't know. I don't disagree. The Donald Cerrone-Melvin Gillard fight was as good a 1 minute and 16 seconds you'll ever see. But I don't know. Someone should actually, I should have checked on this, but was that the fastest fight of the night in company history?
I think it was, but I'm just going to throw this out there. Just throwing it out there. What do teammates hate to do? Oh, we hate to fight. What do close friends hate to do? We hate to fight. Look, my brother and I would fight right now if you put enough money in front of us. We don't want to kill each other or anything, but, yeah, you know, we'll take the money. These guys obviously don't believe that, you know, because their family is something different, I guess. Maybe he did it as a, see, this is what happens when you fight your buddy. Well, you know, make sure you get hooked up. I'm kind of surprised that it happened, but maybe that's one of the reasons why.
They wanted that fight of the night bonus. And guess what? They got it. In fact, Cerrone got the fight of the night bonus and the best knockout bonus. So he got $120,000 on top of his normal pay, which, as he noted, is going right to the IRS.
Oops.
So he said, he owes him some money.
Oh, by the way, it should be noted, since we talked about this, I believe it was last week, when it came to guys having the incredible novel idea of not getting hit in the face. In the press conference last night, Benson Henderson responded to, it was one of the last questions of the night, as far as his face, he always looks pretty. He's aesthetically, you know, pleasing coming out of fights. He just said, well, I really don't like to get hit in the face, and I try to avoid it as much as possible.
Good for you.
Yes, just kind of shrugged his shoulders, made a face like, yeah, the whole thing is not getting hit.
Well, good for him. That is the whole idea to me behind fighting. I know some people disagree with that. The idea is you're supposed to just fight until one man falls down. To me, it's like, beat up the other guy, and don't let that guy beat up you! Which unfortunately happened to Frankie Edgar one too many times. He always comes out of these fights looking like he's taking a beating. But any other thoughts on the show overall?
No, I mean, I had no problem whatsoever. It was a good show. Again, not surprised people didn't see it, but, you know, no big deal there. You're going to have 12 shows. This is going to happen. And at least I wasn't disappointed up and down the whole thing. So, you know, again, a success, I guess, as much as you can have one in a show like this.
Now, as far as other news, take us through the G1 tournament that is now wrapped up with a surprising, I thought it was a surprising finalist, but you're the Japanese correspondent, Carl Anderson, former tag team partner of Lord Tensai, made it to the finals and did not win, but he went all the way. And take us through this tournament.
Yeah, believe it or not, this has been been going on for a couple of weeks now. New Japan does it every year. It's what the New Japan title spawned from, the G1 tournament that they have every year. And it usually either cements the guy who's on top or sets up a challenger for that guy. And this year, Kazushi Okada, Kazuhika Okada, who was in TNA briefly and then went back to New Japan and, you know, ended up being the big breakout star of last year and into this year, defeated Carl Anderson, former tag team partner over here in the States of Adam Pearce, if I'm not mistaken, and was a longtime partner with Lord Tensai, Giant Bernard, in Japan. And Bernard was the one, when the team first got together, that obviously the veteran guy and the more seasoned guy kind of rolled along and played the lead of that role. But in that time, Anderson was able to develop his personality, play off the Japanese crowd, and he's done a really very good job in doing that, where when he left, it was going to be interesting when Bernard left to come to the States to be Lord Tensai. It was going to be interesting to see where Anderson fell, because they have not been using a whole lot of outside guys in regular roles. I mean, MVP was not a regular in New Japan. He just would come in once in a while. They have Fergal Devitt, but that's a completely different situation. So it looked like Carl Anderson, you know, he was either going to be, he's got to be moved up the card and taken care of, or he's going to be buried and mired forever being a regular over there. And what they've done with him this year was be very careful with him, give him a few wins along the way, have him look good against good stars, and he had this big breakout performance in the G1, which, you know, it showed a couple years ago New Japan had to kind of close its doors and not let any outsiders in because there have been guys like Brock Lesnar and Kaz Fujita and some other guys that have done some serious damage to the promotion, so they kind of shied away with using anyone from the outside. But this is a good sign because now you have Prince Devitt, who's arguably one of the most over guys in the entire company, or not arguably, he is. And Carl Anderson's really established himself with a really good niche and plays well with the media and the whole nine yards. And he is very, very good for people who haven't seen him. He was arguably the most improved wrestler of last year. You can make that case for the newsletter awards. And I have a feeling he'll be getting a lot of votes this year because of these performances, which haven't seen yet. But if it's anything like his work for most of the year, they're going to be pretty damn good.
We should also talk about Alistair Overeem. There was a lot of discussion over the last week when Junior Dos Santos said, I don't want this fight with Kane yet. I want to fight with Alistair Overeem. He said mean things about me. And, of course, this resulted in a lot of fans in an uproar over the idea of him skipping over Cain Velasquez, who earned his title shot in absolutely destroying Bigfoot Silva. Not to mention Overeem is currently on a suspension and can't even apply for a license until the end of December. And as it turns out, Dana White made the decision that, yes, you are going to fight Cain. It's going to take place in Las Vegas at the end of December. And then presumably the, well, if Junior Dos Santos wins, he can face Alistair Overeem after that. Which, if you want to give Alistair Overeem a title match coming off a drug test failure, fine. But don't let him leapfrog over the number one contender, especially when he can't even get licensed until after that fight would take place. So I think this was the right move. I was very upset at the idea of Overeem getting the shot before Cain. Now we don't have to worry about that.
What'd I tell you? We spent way too much time on that last week. There was no other actual result that could possibly happen except for Dos Santos and Velasquez fighting. It just, Overeem was never, for as much as what he wanted to say or what he thought or what his side decided to leak out there, which caused some of this uproar and furor, and obviously it was Dos Santos' comments as well. It was not going to happen. It didn't make any sense. And again, if this was truly a Dos Santos thing, then all UFC had to do was go, he can't get licensed, and since you don't want to fight, we're going to strip you. And that would have changed his mind anyway.
You think they would have done that?
I think they should have, because they're in a position right now where Ed Soares and Anderson Silva pushing them around and messing with them is one thing. To have other fighters start to do it and start to wanting to pick and choose at a time where they are so injury ravaged, where they need heroes and they need draws and things like that, I think you don't let him out under contract, but you hit him right in the championship portion of something you can do to hurt him, which is do that. And I think you at least have to threaten that. I mean, you know, if fighters don't like that, then they can unionize or something like that. But that would be a completely legitimate thing for the UFC to do within their power to stop that. They can't do that with guys saying, I don't want to fight a guy who's not a champion. They at least have that over Dos Santos where, well, you know what, that's fine, but you're not going to be able to represent us as our top guy if you're refusing to fight the number one contender and want to fight a guy that failed a drug test who's not even licensed.
Abraham Washington and Sophia Cortez are gone. I was given the impression that Abraham Washington was largely axed. Well, obviously he made the Kobe Bryant joke on Raw, but then it seemed like he apologized, they apologized, nothing would come of it. But then a week and a half later, he's axed. And the impression I was given was that, at least inside the company, the feeling is political. Linda running for office, guy made a rape joke. He's got to go. And there were people very unhappy about the turn of events. They'd kind of given him the impression he needed to turn up the heat a little bit. And then when he did, he said the wrong thing and got fired. So he's very upset. He's ranting and raving on Twitter about that. But that is the situation with him. And then Sophia Cortez, apparently the story there was that she had what they believed to be an attitude problem. She thought that she was being held down. She should have been moved up quicker. In fact, it was the exact same thing we just heard about Maxine. Maxine quit because she'd been in developmental for many years and wasn't being utilized to what she felt was her full potential. So she's gone. And I was kind of given the impression that between now and SummerSlam, it's probably going to be a pretty interesting week and a half. Whatever that means, make of that what you will. But we should have news on next week's show. So, Mike, your thoughts on all of this?
I like juicy nuggets and tidbits, so I'll take it. Yeah, you know, it's probably craptastic with AW, but it was such a lame joke anyway. He should have been fired just because it sucked. And it's outdated, and it was, you know, again, in poor taste under the circumstances coming off Tosh and knowing that Linda's running for Senate. But then again, with that said, I mean, it's just so ridiculous. I mean, the whole thing, and when you actually stop and think about it, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And I guess
I hate to say it, have to head to a break. Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to wrap up the program for the week, Wrestling Observer Live. And Mike was rudely cut off by myself in the last segment as he was talking about AEW, Sophia Cortez, and Juicy Nuggets.
Well, I mean, the juicy nuggets of information that are going to take place on this broadcast that you will be able to, you know, let all of us know about when you crack the cases of all of these stories and happenings that are going on leading into SummerSlam.
Yes. SummerSlam is next week, everybody.
Next week. And I'm willing to pay for Paul Heyman and Stephanie McMahon if they put that on there. I'd rather pay for that than Brock and Triple H.
Yeah, we're going to do a full preview of SummerSlam on next week's program. And if you're a website subscriber, head to WrestlingObserver.com on our board. And the get-togethers area, you can find out all the information you need to know about Super China Buffet Day, a way to get together with local wrestling fans in your area, enjoy a delicious lunch, and then get together for SummerSlam. We're having one here in Seattle, and it's going to be an awesome time, including free Cold Stone ice cream. That's right. Super China Buffet Day, it is our annual tradition prior to SummerSlam. And as noted, next week, we're going to run down the entire card for that show, talk about all of the matches as I personally prepare for Super China Buffet Day. And, tomorrow's Raw as well. It's a go-home show. It's 3 hours, and we'll see what they do for all the top matches. They have not piqued my interest, as Mike noted, in the Brock Lesnar versus Triple H match. They've got one more day, and Shawn Michaels is going to be at the show. Brock has threatened to kill the man, and I guess we'll see what happens. Shawn is billed as being in the corner of Triple H at SummerSlam, so it's hard to do when you're dead. So presumably Brock can't kill him too bad. But if he doesn't kill Shawn Michaels too bad, what are they going to do to build interest in this particular match? I guess we'll find out tomorrow. So, Mike, I want to thank you as always for doing the show today. You can always check out Mike's work at WrestlingObserver.com. Does a lot of shows up there. A fine gentleman. And, of course, all the folks at Sports Byline USA, all of the listeners. Check out WrestlingObserver.com. Live running play-by-play of TNA is starting right now. Head over there, and we'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.